Welcome to the Upward Running Podcast, where faith fuels your fitness journey.
Welcome back to the Upward Running Podcast. This is your one stop each week to be motivated and inspired to get off the couch and onto the running trail, where you can in turn inspire others to do the same. Let's learn, laugh, and leap into running together, giving God the glory for what we are able to do in His name. Amen. I'm your running host, Dean Thompson, coming to you once again from the Upward Sports Studio after a couple of weeks on the road. So this should be exciting. Today we're going to share a story of a man who, of course, is a runner. And he grew up in a really troubled household and overcame all of that. And it's a great story, and you'll hear that today. And then I'm going to share my thoughts on race awards and those little trinkets that we get at the races, including T-shirts and things. And how should we look at those things? And joining me for those stories and much more is Upward Running Director Mitchell Hollis.
How's your week been, Dean?
Good week. Yeah. Good week. You know, last week I did the wedding thing.
Oh, yeah. I forgot to ask you about that.
Yeah.
How did that go?
It went well.
Yeah.
I got to tell a funny story, though. You know, it's always... your words reverberated in my head at one point.
My words?
Your words.
And during a wedding?
During what?
You were conducting?
You'll understand that here in just a minute. So I plan everything out. I've got all my words written down, and I've got a Bible, and I've got these pages printed out and stuck in the pages of the Bible so that I can use that for my notes to guide me along.
So did you use? I'm sorry to cut you off. Did you use the Book of Common Prayer version of the wedding vows and all that?
I made up my own.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was all fresh. And actually, I used a couple's devotional Bible that I bought new,
right.
And I gave it to them after we got through,
oh, cool.
So they would have the Bible that their ceremony was. Anyway, it was cool, and it went well. There was one moment, though.
Mm.
And so there was a moment, you know, where they actually wrote out their own vows and said those, and then they did the traditional vows.
Sure.
And so I, Dylan, take you, Liv, to be my lawfully wedded wife. That same thing,
sure.
That traditional thing you normally hear. And then I turned to Liv, and I said, Olivia, repeat after me. Olivia, I, Olivia, take... you, Dylan, to be my lawfully wedded wife. What I had done was I cut and pasted.
That cut and paste gets you every time.
That's what I heard in my head, because I've heard you say that before. And sure enough, and we all giggled about it, and it was funny. And, you know, there's always a moment in a wedding where things
sure.
don't go right, and it's funny. And that was funny. And so she looked at me, and then later on I said, I am so sorry that I messed that up. She said, well, you know, sometimes he does act like a girl. So it was...
Well, I'm sure it broke the... Because, you know, it can be a pretty tense time.
Yes.
And so a little laughter can break that.
Yep.
So.
Yep. Yep.
Well, that's cool. I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah. It was fun and an honor and a pretty, pretty neat thing to be a part of. So
I learned something from mine and your time away last week. So I've been tracking my sleep. You
mm-hmm.
know, we've been talking about sleep and what you eat and what time you go to bed and what time you stop eating. I realized that sleeping in a hotel, that by itself dramatically impacts your sleep performance. But eating a ribeye steak at 9:30 at night, which is when we ate dinner both nights, was late.
Oh.
Just destroys your sleep.
Yeah.
So I'm in the bed by 9:30, and both nights we were up there, we were eating dinner after 9 o'clock both nights. And
oh,
so,
my goodness.
It took a few weeks it took a few days to fix that.
Yes, yes.
Get back on track.
And it's the same thing. Yeah. I don't think mine, it doesn't affect me as much as it does you. It does affect me. Anytime I'm sleeping away from home, I don't sleep as well. But it seemed like your score was impacted a lot more than mine.
Yeah. And I don't know if it's, could it be some of it is a placebo that I think it's going to be bad, therefore it's going to be bad? I don't know.
There may be some of that, maybe.
I don't know, but it was a good trip. We had a great time up there.
Absolutely.
Visiting with those two churches. And, man, it was just, I love, you and I talked about this. I love doing that. I love getting with these coaches and being a part of those classes. That night with Sue and Melissa's class, man, it was just so fun. We went out and did their workout with them, and I stayed in the back and with the walkers, and you were up with the runners, and there was about, what, 40
people?
Yeah,
there was a bunch.
And we went through this neighborhood, which is beside their church, and I don't know, it's just really, it's really cool to get out. It kind of brings back the why we do what we do.
Yeah, yeah. I could totally do that like all the time. That would be, yeah, that would be so much fun.
Yeah,
that
is for sure.
Load of fun, for sure. But we're back, and we have a post of the week this week. Comes from Victoria Mercado. She says, good morning. Just wanted to share that I'm excited to start the Couch to Marathon with this group. Backstory, I've completed a few marathons already after knee surgery in 2023, which hindered me a lot. In a job change this year, I have fallen off the training wagon big time, and I feel like I lost that motivation I used to have. I recently started going to church in April, and I'm trying to find my way back to running. I am so happy to have found this program that combines faith and fitness.
Wow.
So we have 70 people that are signed up to do the Couch to Marathon that finishes at the Cannonball Marathon next year. And I'm really excited about that. That's in Greensboro, North Carolina. And I think there's still time, right? People can still join.
Well, I mean, this is just now week one as we're recording this.
Right. So
I mean, we've always said, if you've never run, you can jump in really the first several weeks.
Sure.
You can jump in. So if and you can still go join if you become a Run Club member, get on the app, go to the marathon training plans, and you'll see the fall Couch to Marathon. And on that, just so everybody knows, I think an email may have already gone out, but the guided runs are live. And it's you and I talking people through these workouts. And I did one the other day, and besides hearing my own voice, it was very enjoyable.
Good.
I mean, because I did the workout as I was describing it, just because I wanted to experience it. And man, it really worked. Have you done one yet?
I haven't.
You need to try one.
I need to.
It is really... You don't, I mean, when we were up in
Pennsylvania,
you know, Sue was out there with her stopwatch and her phone and her whistle and all that stuff. You don't have to do any of that anymore. You just have to listen to what the prompts say. You can turn your earbuds on transparency so you can still talk to everybody. But when it's time to walk or run, you or I are coming in saying, hey, and we're giving a little bit of commentary and kind of breaking it up. And the early reviews from it are very good. So this was a big thing for the app that we've been waiting on, especially for those of you who are in the 5K challenge. This is a game changer. And so if you haven't tried it, go in there, sign up for either the Couch to Marathon, because the first 12 weeks is all guided, or the 5K challenge, all have guided runs now. So go in there and check that out.
Yeah, yeah, it's exciting. I know people have asked too, can we do that for some of the other programs? It's a little harder to do with the other programs because the 5K, the 5K challenge is all based on
time,
and then everything else after that is based on
distance.
But
maybe we'll figure that out at some point.
Yeah, we may do it. But yeah, I think that was probably the most important thing we could do to make the app useful was
especially for the church model.
And then the integration with Garmin is probably the next best thing.
Maybe live by the time this comes out.
Yeah.
It's I think it's just waiting on some approvals before it can go live.
And so those are big deals there. Yeah. So it's really good to see that stuff happen.
Sure.
For sure. So she says, do we have any advice for people who are just starting this Couch to Marathon journey? And I would say what we always say, be consistent, stick with a plan.
Sure.
Try to get in every workout. You may miss one here and there, but just try to get in every workout, and you're going to find yourself doing things that you didn't think you could do.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So,
and I would say kind of along those lines, treat it like a meeting. You've heard me say this before.
Mm-hmm.
If you're a calendar person, put it on your calendar as if it is a meeting, and you're going to do it at this time on this day, or for the 5K challenge, these 3 days of the week, because you'll make time for the things that you prioritize. And if you just don't put it on your calendar and you think, well, I'll get it in when I can get it in, that's a recipe for it not to happen.
So absolutely.
Prioritize it. You're investing in yourself. This is a big commitment. Make it a priority in your life, and you will be successful with it.
And we promise you it will be worth it if you will do that.
Absolutely.
And if it's not worth it, if you get through this thing and you get to the end and you think, yeah, that wasn't worth all that time, then you can come and slap us in the face if you want to. But I guarantee
we've never had anybody do that yet.
That's right.
They may want to do that for other reasons, but not because they regret doing the program.
That's right. Our run of the week comes from John Terrence Campbell. Actually, it wasn't a run of the week, but this is what John said. It was a difficult week, to say the least. I didn't even have the opportunity to send out a prayer request. I spent over 4 torturous hours in the dentist chair. It might as well have been the electric chair, LOL. This was to replace a crown that was done in Africa. It did not go well. They had trouble stopping the bleeding, a lot of pain. Stayed medicated and rested yesterday. Today, I was back at it for a brisk victory walk to give thanks to God.
You know, that hurts my mouth to read that.
I know it does, yeah.
I mean, everybody knows that feeling of the metal instrument in your mouth and that drill bit and all those things.
Yes. And so John was a missionary in Africa. And so I guess he had some dental work while he was done there, and it needed to be repaired, and bless him. But sometimes, you know, it's just a relief to be able to get back out there.
Sure.
And do anything. And that's what John was thankful for here. John's usually a runner, mm-hmm. but in this case, he was just glad to be out there doing some walking. So, I'm with you on the dentist. I like my dentist, but I don't like the dentist.
The dentist, yeah.
Yeah, that's the bottom line. I just went through this not too long ago, almost mm-hmm. something similar to what John went through, in that I had some dental work done at one time. And it had to be kind of undone and redone. And I know what he's talking about. And you look at it and you go, I should have done this earlier. You know, and it wouldn't have been as bad.
I'm pretty sure somebody told you to do it earlier.
Yeah. a lot of people, actually. so anyway, on the social pages, it is fall. So we should start seeing some cool race reports coming up soon, because it's fall is race time.
It's going to be down in the 40s here next week.
Yeah. Isn't that great? That's going to be fun. Just in time for that 5K running in Atlanta. Yeah. Well, our trivia question from, 3 weeks ago now. In all of the throwing events, shot put, discus throw, hammer throw, and javelin, the men's implement is heavier than the women's. In which of those events are the world records closest to the same distance for both men and women? This was an interesting thing I'd never thought about until, I don't know why, I was watching World Championships, I think, and I thought, I wonder. And so I realized after I asked this question, too, that this is kind of a trick question, because there's really two correct answers. There's the correct answer of which one is closer percentage-wise and which one is closer actual real distance-wise. Mm-hmm. So, but let's go through them one at a time. The closest is the discus as far as percentage goes. The men's world record is a little over 247 feet, and the women is 252 feet. There's just over 4 feet of difference between them. This is the only one where the women's record is actually longer than the men's record. So in the discus, the women actually throw a little bit further than the men's. Now, one of the reasons for that, or the reason for that, is that the men's discus weighs 2 kilograms or 4.4 pounds, and it's about 8.7 inches in diameter. The women's discus only weighs 1 kilogram, 2.2 pounds, so it's half the weight. And the diameter is about 7.1 inches, so it's smaller for their smaller hands. But the women actually throw further than the men in that case. In the shot put, the difference is the men's record is 77 feet, just over, and the women's record is just over 74 feet. So there's right at a 3 foot difference. So in actual distance, this one's closer. In percentages, the discus is closer. So I would take either answer as correct. The men's shot weighs 16 pounds. This is interesting to me. The men's shot weighs 7.26 kilograms or 16 pounds. The women's shot weighs 4 kilograms or 8.8 pounds. Don't you think that's weird that one seems to be based on pounds and the other one seems to be based on kilograms? But anyway, the women's is a little bit.
Do we know where – did all of the track and field events start in one location, or – did they all date back to the original Olympic times, or did they start in different places?
They don't date back to original Olympic times, but my guess, I don't know. It's a good question, because you would, the discus obviously goes back because we have statues that have discus throwers. But the, you would think the javelin, I mean, you'd think that was a spear thrower, you know, and the shot put makes sense. So I don't know. The hammer is the one that seems weird. It seems like maybe, but I don't know. That was kind of a weapon kind of thing.
That could be a sling, the old slingshot. The shot put's the one. I don't know what it is. What does that translate into for a
hunter and gatherer? It's just throwing a weight as far as you can. From an athlete, that's not a hunter-gatherer thing, but I think from a competition thing, that just makes sense. It's almost like sprinting, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
Anyway, pretty big weight distance between the two, but the men still throw further than the women in that case. The hammer is the shot put on a cable.
Yeah.
It's the same weight.
I didn't realize that.
As the shot put. It's the same diameter, I think, as the shot put. So now the cable that the weight is attached to is just a little bit longer for the men than it is the women, but it's only 3/4 of an inch longer. You would think that would be more than that, but that's the difference. And so the hammer, if you've not watched it, it is a spectacular thing to watch. Mm-hmm. Those people that throw the hammer, I don't know how they do it. They get to spin in so fast and let that thing go at just the right time. And it's just, I don't know. I mean, it makes sense to them, but when you watch it, you go, man, how did they not let that thing go too early or too late?
Knock the guy out behind them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's pretty cool. So anyway, the distance for men is 284 feet. For women, it's 272 feet. So there's a pretty big difference between those two there. So the javelin also is a pretty big distance between them. The men's is just over 323 feet to the women's, which is 237 feet. So that's a huge difference between men's and women's javelin. Now, the difference in the weight of the two are not nearly as much. The men's javelin weighs 800 grams while the women's weighs 600 grams. And the men's is also 8 feet 10 inches long while the women's is 7 feet 7 inches long. So there's a not as big of a difference in the weight of the implement in the case of the javelin, and therefore the men throw a lot longer than the other. Here's what's interesting about the javelin. The javelin was something that the implement changed. All these other events, as far as I know, those implements have been the same for as long as we've been doing it, in the modern day at least. But the javelin, actually, they had to change it. The reason they had to change it was because men started throwing the javelin around 100 meters. And if you ever watch a lot of the competitions, they're throwing on the infield in the track. Well, you don't have a lot longer than 100 meters before you're throwing it onto the track.
Yeah.
And so they had to change the implement to make it where it wouldn't fly as far. And what's interesting, I thought this was fascinating. The way they changed the implement was they moved the center of gravity of the javelin forward 1.6 inches. And just that little bit of a difference made a big difference in how far you could throw the thing. But they're getting pretty close. They're almost at 100 meters now. The record is 98 meters and something. So it's getting pretty close to 100 meters now. Makes me wonder if at some point in time they're going to have to change that again. I don't know.
Good listening. Yeah. Would that be physics?
I personally think they should always have the javelin throw outside the stadium. That and the hammer throw, probably.
And just throw it however you want.
Well.
Grip it wherever you want and throw it however you want, as long as everybody's using the same implement.
Yeah. In a lot of competitions, they do have it outside the stadium, but most of them are out on the infield. So can be dangerous. They're actually, if you're one of those people who like to watch gross and tough to watch things, there is a video online of somebody getting hit by a javelin.
Oof.
Years ago. It's really grainy, so it's not very, the resolution's really low, But you can kind of see what happens, and oh my gosh, it is so. I mean, people have been killed by javelins.
Yeah,
and
well, I mean, that's where it comes from—is the spear.
Yeah,
I mean, it's
that's exactly right.
It's used for.
That's exactly right. Yeah. The other thing they did when they changed the weight, where the weight was, is they made it. They made the tip blunter, so that if it did hit somebody, it wouldn't be, hopefully, as bad.
It's still gonna be bad.
Yeah, you would think.
I mean,
so.
That thing's coming. What? I mean, what are they traveling? 60 miles an hour, probably?
Yeah, it's got to be moving
pretty
good.
And they're heavy?
Yeah.
It's going to do some damage.
Yeah, I'm sure it would. But that's the throwers. They're different people. They are different people by a long way. Not better, not worse. They're just a whole different mindset.
Yeah.
And I like throwers.
They're there to intimidate the runners. That's what they're there for.
they do that.
Upward Sports equips churches to run self-sustaining sports ministries in their communities. Whether you're a sports fanatic or on staff at a church, Upward Sports will give you all the tools you need to run a first-class sports ministry that allows you to reach families in your community. Upward Sports offers basketball, soccer, flag football, cheerleading, volleyball, baseball, and softball through league and camp offerings. At Upward Sports, we want to help your church make a difference and give you increased opportunities to share the gospel. Learn more today at upward.org. That's upward.org.
All right, we're back. And don't forget, if you have a story, and let's face it, we all have a story, you need to submit your story to us, because we're going to be sharing a story this week that's not actually a story that somebody sent us.
Sure.
Because we need some stories.
There's 70 people that their story is being written right now. And I would love to hear your story now, and then let's talk about it again when you finish that marathon. So
absolutely.
For all of you 70 people who are listening, your story's being written right now. Go ahead and send us. There is also a young lady that we talked to on our past trip that needs to submit her story.
That's
she knows
right.
who she is.
She does. All right. I found this on a message board where people were arguing about which race is the toughest race in high school track and field. And this guy wrote this, and it made me laugh out loud, and I wanted to share it. He said, the 1600, which is, for those of you who don't know, that's basically the mile run, is a special sort of torture. You don't remember how bad it is until after you're foolish enough to line up for another one. And then when you get to 500 or 600 meters, you realize you're in for it, but too late to escape except a humiliating dropout. When you pass 800 meters, everything goes into slow motion. The third lap is eternal. And hell arranges to have two or three people pass you and quickly gap you by 20 to 30 meters. To finish the third lap, you first have to complete the first half of it, and then half of the remaining 200, half of the remaining 100, and so forth, ad infinitum. It is mathematically impossible to complete the third lap. Literally takes forever. I think many runners disappear into an eternal third lap time dungeon. If you do somehow manage to complete the third lap, by then you are in a state of pure agony. But it is physically and mentally impossible to drop out of a race with less than one lap left, so you have no choice but to endure another however many seconds of existential dissolution. When it is all over and you have recovered, your mind blocks out the horror from memory. You could not live a normal life otherwise. You'd go insane. Unfortunately, this leads you to run the mile again and again until your soul is severely scarred and you are doomed to a life of subtle dementia.
Did Jerry Snyder write that?
It sounds like it, doesn't it?
I think this guy captures it perfectly.
He does.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah. It sounds like something, the book Once a Runner, it sounds like something that might have been written in Once a Runner.
Yeah.
And because there's all sorts of things like this there, but. But yeah, the 1600, the mile run, it is painful. It is so painful.
You know, the very first sentence, you don't remember how bad it is until after you're foolish enough to sign up for another one. I think that can go for most races.
I think you're right.
You know, I think about, I mean, I've only done a handful of Ironmans and half Ironmans, but lining up to the start line, for me, it was like, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
Why? And then, you know, you always say, you've always hear that 20 miles in a marathon is halfway through the race.
Yeah.
20 miles through the marathon of an Ironman is still only halfway through the race,
yeah,
in my opinion. And so at mile 20 on the run in an Ironman, you're like, I will never, ever, ever do this again. And you cross the finish line and you're like, I think I want to do that again.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's until you get to the next start line and you're like, what have I done?
Yeah, it's so true. It's true. It's true for everything. Yeah. The difference between running the short races like the mile and the Ironman is that you get to that point of pain so much slower. It's so gradual. It almost like it sneaks up on you, mm-hmm, and it takes a while to get there. With the mile, it hits you just like a 2x4 upside the head, you know, boom. Yeah. All of a sudden you feel so bad. And I, you know, I think the last time I ran a mile was when I did it on the track and we recorded it when I was, it was 40 years after the first time I'd run a sub-5 and I was trying to run another sub-5 minute mile. And I just, I remember when I got through with it, as soon as I crossed the finish line, you asked me or said something to me and I was like, I can't respond right now. It just hurts so bad.
Yeah.
But it was fun. It was fun. It definitely left an impression.
Yeah, I think the difference, I'm sitting here thinking about that. I think the difference is for the mile, those short distance runs, it is pure, real, acute pain.
Yeah.
And for the Ironman, it's as much a mental agony because I ask you a question at the end of that, and you said, I can't think about that. And then you come up to me during the Ironman that time asking me to do math, of all things. And I was like, I can't talk to you. Leave.
Yeah.
Get away from me, team. But it's two different mindsets. One, I mean, I think your mind is fully engaged in the short distance stuff.
Yeah.
It's just trying to tune the pain out.
Yeah.
For the long distance stuff, it's a mind trick.
Yeah, brain goes fuzzy.
Because your legs, I mean, yeah, you're shot, but it's not, the pain is more in your head than your legs.
That's true. Very, very true.
That rings true for everybody, but it does me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I got this story from a story written through Riverside Church, which is a church up in Michigan. So I thought I would share this one. It's called Running the Race of Faith. Wilbur Miller, that's hard to say. Mm-hmm. Wilbur Miller's Story of Redemption and Victory. Life is a marathon, not a sprint. Along the way, we face trials, setbacks, and moments where we feel like giving up. But on the other side of our greatest struggles lies the greatest victories. This is the story of Wilbur Miller, a man who endured deep pain, loss, and hardship, but found ultimate redemption in the healing and healing through Jesus Christ. For Wilbur, running was more than just exercise. It was where he found peace. It was his place to process, to breathe, to escape. But long after he ran his first marathon, Wilbur was running from something far more painful, a past filled with abuse, rejection, and unimaginable hardship. Growing up in a poor but strict home, Wilbur was the only one of 7 siblings who eventually left his family's way of life. His childhood was marked by poverty, hunger, and fear. His father, an angry alcoholic, ruled the home with an iron fist. Wilbur and his siblings endured beatings, humiliation, and the constant weight of survival. Some nights, his lunchbox held nothing but a small piece of cake. Other nights, he was left outside in the cold as punishment, wondering if anyone truly cared. By the time he was a teenager, he longed to escape. His father's words cut deep, convincing him he would never amount to anything. At 18, he left home, determined to break free from his past. But instead of finding healing, he found himself trapped in a cycle of alcohol, reckless living, and self-destruction. Like a marathon runner hitting the wall, Wilbur reached a breaking point. No matter how hard he tried to run from his pain, it always caught up to him. The emptiness inside led him down dark paths, even seeking answers from the occult. But God had a different plan. a stranger began appearing in his life multiple times at random locations. This man shared his testimony and told Wilbur about Jesus. At first, Wilbur brushed it off, but the words lingered. Then, during a long-haul trucking trip, Wilbur's truck broke down in the middle of nowhere. With no distractions, no escape, and no one to call, he found himself alone with his thoughts. That night, inside the cab of his semi-truck, Wilbur surrendered his life to Christ. Everything changed from that moment. Though his family opposed his decision to follow Jesus, Wilbur pressed on. He began attending church, was baptized, and for the first time felt true freedom. The chains of his past no longer defined him. He was a new creation. Forgiving his father was one of the hardest steps, but Wilbur knew he couldn't fully embrace his healing without it. He wrote his father a heartfelt letter, pouring out years of pain and finally releasing it to God. Though his father never spoke of it, Wilbur later learned the letter had been read by his entire family. Even though their relationship wasn't perfect, something had shifted. The generational curse was broken. Yet, life still had trials. Years later, he and his wife faced a devastating betrayal, false accusations that threatened everything they had built. But instead of bitterness, they chose forgiveness. It wasn't easy, but they knew that just as Christ had forgiven them, they were called to extend that same grace. Wilbur's story is a testament to God's power to restore and redeem. The Christian's life isn't always easy. It requires endurance, much like a marathon. But Isaiah 40:31 reminds us those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary, and they will walk and not be faint. No matter what you've been through, no matter how broken you feel, God's love is greater. He restores, He redeems, and He calls you to run with Him, to push past the pain and into the victory He has prepared for you. If you feel like you've hit a wall in life, don't stop. Keep running. Keep believing. God is with you, and He has already overcome the world.
Wow. What a great story.
Yeah, in the middle of this article, too, there was a video of him actually sharing his testimony on stage, I guess, at that church. And one of the things, I kind of changed this story just a little bit in the beginning because I didn't want this to be kind of a hook that got in people's way, because one of the things it said was that this was an Amish family.
Right.
And I know when I read that, I thought they were saying that Amish people were bad people. And I didn't get that feeling, but it sounded that way, the way it was written into the story. And so I just wanted to make sure that we didn't come across that way. All the Amish people I've ever met have been really nice people.
Sure.
Now, they have a strict way of living, for sure. And that's their
feeling.
There's
a lot we can learn from their way of living.
Sometimes.
I actually watched this is a sidebar, but just two or three nights ago, I watched a special on the Amish. Is it from Pennsylvania? And their way of life and how they live. And it's appealing.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways.
There are a lot of ways. Yeah.
Very appealing. Very traditional.
Yeah. Yeah. We definitely tend to stray past the limit of where God wants us to be in the world, I think, very often. And
sure.
The Amish are just, they put things in place to say, we're not going there.
Yeah.
And there's some good to that. But anyway, it sounds like this family they lived the Amish lifestyle, but they weren't really practicing, you know, faithful to church and God folks, sort of like people today who
say they have their flaws, like we all do. Yeah.
Well, and there's a lot of people today who say, well, I'm Christian, but they never go to church and they never
there's no fruit.
There's no fruit. It's a good way to put it. Anyway, the bottom line is that, you know, Jesus can change everything. If you find yourself in a situation that's tragic, that's as bad as Wilbur was in, if you could just find Jesus, it can make all the difference. And I think running helps us put these things in perspective better too.
Right.
Obviously it did for him, and that maybe that was part of his healing journey. It didn't really connect those two that well, but you know, when you hit the wall in a marathon, you get a different picture of what physically hard means.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's just, you never realize things could feel like that.
Yeah.
And then it makes other things that you experience later that are physically difficult, it makes them easier because you have a relative thing to look at. Well, in our spiritual and our mental lives, it's all the same thing. Mm-hmm. When we hit those tough things, it makes, you know, all the things Wilbur goes through from now on are probably going to be the tough situations, probably going to be a lot easier because he's been through tough times.
And it's so important because, you know, in our society, we strive for easy. We want to make everything easy. And I'm not saying that's in and of itself a bad thing, but you need to occasionally go back to that hard thing, to remember that hard situation or whatever it is in your life, or even in your physical, you know, if you're trying to do a marathon, you have to do hard, because if the only time you do hard is in the race, it's not going to go well. You've got to expose yourself to trials and hardships, because if you don't, when you do come upon those real trials and hardships, you're going to buckle. You're going to fold.
Yep, absolutely. Isaiah 40:31, but those who wait on the Lord shall renew their strength. They shall mount up with wings like eagles. They shall run and not be weary. They shall walk and not faint. This is a popular one for us. We've gone over this one a number of times, but what does it mean in the context of Wilbur's story? And the thing that sticks out to me in the context of Wilbur's story, I look at the line, shall renew their strength, a little bit differently. Again, people go through these tough things, and you know, some people just have to be strong to get through those things. But the idea that that mental strength that they have to get through that thing is just pointed in the wrong direction. Mm-hmm. And the idea of renewing your strength is really taking some of the strength that you may already have and just pointing it in the right direction. I think that's what Wilbur does here, because obviously you've got to be mentally strong just to endure some of the things that he endured. But, you know, 2 Corinthians tells us we are a new creation.
Sure.
And Wilbur took that seriously, and he became that new creation, and it made all the difference.
I thought about Isaiah 40:31 the other day. I was listening. I forget who it was I was listening to, but they talking about renewing their strength, waiting on the Lord, which is many times the hardest thing to do, so that we can renew our strength. And this guy, I think it was a sermon I was listening to. I don't remember. I just remember the story. He talked about two guys who were chopping wood. They chop wood for a living. And this one guy had been doing it for years. Well, this new guy came on, and this new guy was just full of energy. You know, the new guy just chop, chop, chop. You know, he was going to beat everybody. And so he chopped. And I mean, just like the Energizer Buddy, just chopped and chopped and chopped all day long for 8 hours. The guy that he was working with would chop wood for an hour and leave and come back 30 minutes later and continue to chop. And he would do this every other hour. He would leave and come. He would leave for 30 minutes and come back. And at the end of the day, he had always chopped 30 to 40% more wood than the new guy who sat there and chopped all day long. And the new guy finally asked him one day, he said, how is it that I sit here and I chop consistently all day long and I chop less wood than you, and you're gone for 20% of the time? And the guy says, well, it's simple. He said, I go home and I sharpen my axe and I get something to eat. And I come back and I have a sharp axe. I've waited. I've taken a break. I've sharpened my tool and I've come back. And that's why that was such a great story to parallel to Isaiah 40:31, that we think the answer so many times is go, 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 go.
Yep.
When so many times God is saying, wait, let's pause here, sharpen your axe, get you something to eat, take a break, and then go again. But that in our society, that is not the right answer.
Yeah.
It's who can go the hardest. You know, I want to go hard. I'm the guy that gets up at 5 o'clock every morning and I'm working till midnight every night. That's not going to last long.
You know, another illustration of that is I learned this when I did my first ultra marathon, that 100 miler.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I wasn't taking any breaks right. early because why did I need to take a break? Sure. I'd never taken a break before.
You're a runner.
I'm a runner. Yeah. I've never taken breaks. And well, it turns out that when you run for like 24 hours, you need to take some breaks.
Yeah.
And I learned that the hard way. And yeah, once I did one where I did take breaks, I was able to do it.
Sure.
2 Corinthians 5:17, therefore, if anyone is in Christ, he is a new creation. Old things have passed away. Behold, all things have become new. In our, where were we talking about this? Oh, this was in my Sunday school class. We were talking about the book of Ruth. You know, she lost her husband. She lost both of her kids. Her life became unraveled. And it was so bad that Naomi thought, I need to rename myself. Sort of like somebody today saying, hey, you know, I know my name has always been Tom, but please call me garbage from now on.
Right.
You know, yeah. It's like trying to label yourself as something just to make everybody think you're in a bad shape. And in her case, she went by the name Mara, which meant bitter. Mm-hmm. And of course, I'm sure she was bitter. But Ruth could have gone along with that, and Ruth could have, but she didn't. And she kept trying to give Naomi something else to look at, something else to hope for, something. And of course, when Ruth and Boaz got married, all those bad things were essentially reversed, mm-hmm. and everything was well again. And she was able to put all those things behind her and realize that she did have a future that was worth living for. And, you know, when we accept Christ, all of those things from our past, they just become irrelevant. Doesn't mean they go away. Mm-hmm. But it does mean that they don't have to have an impact on anything we have going forward. And in Wilbur's story here, that's what happened.
Sure.
All of these things were dragging him down. He kept thinking about all of those bad circumstances, and it just, you know, it gets heavy on your mind. And not until he could get past that. And the only way we get past that is with Jesus. And
And the cool thing about 2 Corinthians 5:17 is those things that once drug you down, can now be used to propel you forward.
Absolutely.
That can be, all things are used to the good of those who love Christ. That hard thing that used to make you bitter and mad all the time can be used to, that's who I was. You know, like Phil Robertson used to say, that man is dead.
Yeah.
But it wasn't that it was completely gone. It was used to propel him to, I'm not going back there anymore.
Mm-hmm.
That's part of my testimony, but that's my past.
Yeah.
And so it's just a different perspective when you've got Christ in your heart.
Oh, great way to put it. Galatians 2:20, I have been crucified with Christ, and I no longer live, but Christ lives in me. The life I now live in the body, I live by faith in the Son of God, who loved me and gave himself for me. This is... It's so, the transformation that Jesus can make in our lives is just, you know, we go from struggling. It's the running equivalent is you go from struggling just to run for a mile to being able to complete marathons at world record pace.
Right.
That's the difference in before and after is that big. It's mm-hmm. just huge. And we never have to struggle to run again. Now, we will struggle with things. There will be times when it's difficult. There will be, doesn't say that when we become this new person that we no longer have problems.
Mm-hmm.
But all those problems are put into a perspective that it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. It doesn't affect today what happened yesterday, just like you were just saying. It's a good example.
Hmm.
And listen, if you're listening to this, and you're thinking, I don't know that I have that relationship with Jesus that these verses are talking about, go to upwardrunning.com and then find the Peace with God page.
It's upwardrunning.com/peacewithgod.
Yes.
Just type that in.
Yep. And then and there's four videos on there. Yeah. Watch those four videos and you'll understand exactly what we're talking about.
And you may think, can four videos really change my life? The answer is no. But the message in those videos can absolutely 1,000% change your life.
And they have.
It will change your life if you allow it.
They have changed many people's lives, those same four videos.
Yeah.
Yep. How can you use running and or walking to help you change your perspective on Jesus and your life?
You know, it's funny this question comes up because this just happened to me day before yesterday. Dean, day before yesterday was one of those days. That was Monday. It was one of those. It was Monday all day.
Yeah.
I woke up just not in a good mood. And I don't know why. I was supposed to go to something at 10 o'clock, and I got a call at 5 minutes till 9 and said, oh, you thought it was at 10. It's actually at 9. And you know, that's not me.
No, no.
And so, and it was my fault. And so I went to that thing, and it was just one thing after another all day long. And I found myself in one of those moods that I very rarely am in anymore. I used to be in these moods quite a bit, and I'm convinced that the more I study in God's Word, the fewer of those kind of days you have. You have other challenges. But that afternoon, I threw on my rucksack. You and I are about to go rucking here in just a few minutes, and that is very hard. I mean, the weight I'm carrying now, it's very hard to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got done, my whole mind shift, my whole mindset had shifted.
Yeah.
Did any of my circumstances change? Did what happened that morning changed? No. But I did something hard, and it took my focus off of the day, and it put it on what was on my back. For you, that might be what you're doing to your legs in that moment. But it kind of resets our perspective, working out or running or walking or rucking or whatever it is you're doing. Doing hard things will almost always reset your perspective. It's like when you're having a day, bad day, and I'm sure Debbie's told you before, you need to go run.
Yeah.
She understands that.
Yeah.
Holly understands that, mm-hmm. that will change your perspective. And I don't really know that I can explain it from a medical standpoint, but I'm sure there's a medical reason for that. And we've said before, I would love to have a brain doctor, neurologist?
Yeah.
I would love to have one of those in here one day that understands all of this stuff that we talk about from a medical standpoint, because I think it would be neat to talk to somebody that can explain that to us.
Yeah.
Because I can't explain it. It just happens.
Well, let me explain what I think happens here, not in the neurological terms, but in practical terms. One of my favorite things about running is that it forces you to confront yourself, mm-hmm. because you're kind of alone with your thoughts. Now, if you just sat there all alone, you could get the same thing from just sitting there alone, mm-hmm. not doing anything. But we don't do that. We never do that because there's always something else to do. So we're always moving from one thing to another. And so we're always busy doing something else. But what running does is it forces you to let your mind go somewhere. Well, that mind, where's your mind going to go if you're having that bad day? It's going to go on the things of that bad day. And then to me, it's almost like you can't outrun yourself. Right? You know, no matter how fast you run, no matter how hard you run, you're not going to outrun yourself. You're still going to be there. So you don't have any choice.
You go with you.
That's right.
Yeah.
So you don't have any choice but to confront yourself.
Sure.
And I think when we confront ourselves and we can't get away from ourselves, we start to find the truth. And the truth is that guy that you were during those moments when everything was going wrong, that's not you anymore. So when you confront yourself, you have to see, oh my goodness, all of a sudden I'm not being who God made me to be. And I think that's what does it.
And you realize, if I'm just being candid, how ridiculous you look in those moments.
Yes.
I mean, I Monday afternoon when I was doing that ruck, I was thinking, I mean, because I was just testy and ill, and I mean, Holly knew it. My kids knew it. It was like, stay away from Mitchell. You know, I know what goes through their mind. And when you get in those hard things to doing other things, you're right. It forces you to focus on what a moron you were earlier in the day. And that's what I love about God.
Yeah.
Because that's not me doing that. That's God bringing that into focus and saying, hey, kind of take a look at how you acted earlier. That's not who you want to be. And it changed everything.
Yeah.
Now, will I repeat that next week or the week after? It's a very good chance I will. But I think what is cool about our walk with Christ is that you look back and you see that the time between those gets longer and longer. It's not saying it's never going away.
Yeah.
But you learn lessons through the process.
Absolutely. And a lot of times what happens, I think, is we tend to turn back to God quicker the more often it happens too.
Yeah. Yeah. Because if, you know, that's what I always say about conviction. When conviction comes on quickly, it hurts, but it's very comforting because that means God is right there.
Yeah.
You know, he's throwing that rock and he's right behind you. So it's hitting you in the back of the head right then. If you're far away from God, sometimes it's kind of a delayed thing. It takes a minute for you to figure it out. So conviction, while I don't enjoy it, I'm comforted by it.
Yeah. Yeah. Good way to put it. In what ways are you different than you were before you accepted Christ in your heart?
Daylight and dark.
Yeah.
For me.
Well, me too. I'm going to mention something in my Dean's Thoughts story today. When I was young, before I started living life for Christ, my mother would say I had a potty mouth. You know, I just used to use foul language all the time, and that was one of the ways that I changed. But the interesting thing about that change was that how hard I wanted to work on not being that anymore. Mm-hmm. And that's what God puts in your heart. He doesn't, you know, a lot of people, they talk about how you have to give up things in order to become a Christian. Mm-hmm. And I guess in the strict sense of the word, yes, you're giving up things. But the difference is that you want to give up those things.
Sure.
And to me, that is the biggest thing for me. The biggest thing that's changed for me is that it's not just that I am different. It's that my desire to be different is so strong. And that just comes from God. It comes from Him just changing our heart and wanting us to be somebody who He will look at and go, you know, like He did Jesus, this mm-hmm. is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased. That's what we want to hear.
Yeah. It's the difference between works and obedience. Yeah. I mean, works is we're doing things because we feel like we have to. Obedience is doing things because we want to, because we love, we cherish, we respect, we obey that North Star in our life, that North Star being Jesus. And that's the difference. You can see that in a person who is trying to do all the good things and earn their way to something versus somebody that's doing all the right things out of obedience to something. It's a big difference.
Yeah.
It's a heart difference, and you can see that.
Absolutely. Our last question, why is it so hard to get people to see the real Jesus?
Because Jesus is distorted in many areas of our society.
You know, that's a good succinct way to put it.
Yeah.
Yep. It's if you believe in Jesus, you believe in fairy tales, and it's a silly thing. And people, the interesting thing is that the more educated you are, sometimes the less likely you are to believe in Jesus because you just think you're smarter. Mm-hmm. And that's what the world is telling us these days. And despite all of the evidence, that's the interesting thing to me, is that the people who take the story of Jesus and they look at it from a fact-based, evidence-based, scientifically-based way of looking at it, and they take that seriously, mm-hmm. they all come to the same conclusion, that Jesus is who He says He was. The problem is that most of those people won't take that seriously, and that's something that Satan works into the conversations to make sure that people don't take it seriously enough to take it seriously enough. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think the other problem is I was listening to a podcast yesterday that made me think of this, but I think we as the church are guilty of this part in many ways, that we've allowed people to see the building of a church as being the church.
Yeah. Well, that's a good way to put it.
And that's just not, and so you have all these expectations, but what the guy I was listening to yesterday said that I agree with, it kind of cuts deep when you first hear it, but that building is a corporation. It is a corporation. It takes money in, money goes out. It is a corporation. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
But we need to understand that's what it is. It's mm-hmm. not the church. The church is the people who are in that building, which is a corporation. But we have elevated that building to a point that this is the representation of Jesus. And so if the music is off that Sunday, well, then Jesus is off. Mm. Or if it's not serving up the type of music that I want, then Jesus is not appealing to me. Or somebody in that building says something that I don't like, well, Jesus offended me. There's nothing wrong with the building. Don't hear me say that there's anything wrong with our church buildings and our institutions, which is what they are. They're great things. But we can't use that as the image of Christ. The image of Christ is the church. It's the bride of Christ. And the church is you and me sitting here or wherever we might go. It may be on the ruck this afternoon. Whether two or more are gathered, we're going to be gathered out there rucking.
Mm-hmm.
That's the church.
Yep.
It's not the building. Again, nothing wrong with the building, but we've allowed that to be. The question is, why is it so hard to get people to see the real Jesus? Because we're not focusing the magnifying glass on the right thing too many times.
We're all
guilty of it. Yeah. We're focusing on that building and, hey, the church down the road, they've got a new sound system. We've got to get a new sound system. Or the church. And again, I'm not saying I disagree with some of what I heard yesterday on this podcast, but to the point that we are holding the building up as the image of Christ is where.
Or a pastor.
Right. Yeah. That just as common.
Yep.
Maybe even more common.
Mm-hmm.
All of those things will fail you. No question. They will fail you. Jesus, however, will not. And Jesus living in us and us being the church is the only thing that will change us.
Amen. Upward running is the best way to stay motivated for your fitness and faith journeys. You get these weekly podcasts, but there's so much more. We have proven training plans available for you, whether you're just at the beginning of your fitness quest or you've been running for 20 years. We have something for everyone, and it doesn't matter where you are with God either. We have something for you there too. If you're not a member, join today at upwardrunning.com. It is the best value you'll find to fuel both your faith and your fitness. All right, we're back. Interesting stuff going on at Strava and Garmin, and now Suunto as well. So here's what's going on. Strava is suing Garmin. Now, if you don't know what that means, Strava is, if you don't know, it's an app, website kind of thing where you can record, and mm-hmm. it's almost like a log, like an electronic logbook,
sure.
where you can record all of your running information. We actually have an Upward Running Strava group, which is free to join, by the way, if you'd like to join it. So you can look that up and join. But the information is sent to Strava in a few different ways. One, you know, you can go in there and you can actually record it as you do it, or you can manually enter what you've done, or you can upload it from a device.
Which is what we're about to offer.
Yes. That's right, yeah. A cycling computer or a running watch or something like that, you can upload that information. And the way it happens is actually, depending on how you have it set up, it may do it just automatically. Like mine, when I get through it, mine just automatically does it. Mm-hmm. It's just done. And it's pretty cool. It's a pretty cool thing to have. But Garmin is one of those companies that makes those devices. You know, I use a Garmin watch. And Garmin is the largest of all of them mm-hmm. by a long way. You have Apple also has Coros, Suunto. They're probably the next three, but there's a few of them. When I first heard about this lawsuit, it didn't make any sense because basically Strava was suing Garmin for implementing something called segments. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, today segments is it's a Strava thing. Mm-hmm. It is Strava. You hear the word segments and you think Strava.
Sure.
Garmin apparently had implemented something similar 10 years or more than 10 years ago that was similar to this. And there's actually an argument that Garmin may have actually come up with it first. But anyway, and then they also sued him over something similar that has to do with heat maps. Again, definitely a Strava thing. But I thought, this is crazy. Why would Strava, it's almost like biting the hand that feeds you.
Yeah, that's what I'm sitting here thinking.
And it
did. Garmin said, we're not going to allow any of our data to be transferred to Strava anymore, that would be the death of Strava.
Yeah, it would hurt Strava big time. But so I didn't understand it. Mm-hmm. And that went on and I thought, this doesn't make any sense to me. Well, then I heard the real reason. Mm-hmm. So there is a real reason why this is happening, and this is what happened. Strava responded because what Garmin is doing, Garmin sent a letter to Strava saying, we want in all the information when it's presented in the Strava app, we want the Garmin logo to be on every page where you're presenting Garmin information, stuff that came from a Garmin device. Mm. And Strava is saying, that's not reasonable for us to do your advertising for you. And I get that. I can see both sides, I guess I would say. Now I understand that there was a reason for what was happening. And so that if you're hearing stuff about Garmin and Strava, I just hope that in the essentially what Strava is doing is trying to pressure Garmin by saying, we've got this other thing we're going to hold over your head, but we'll let it go if you'll forget about this, putting this logo thing on there. So you know how litigation is. I don't like it, but it's a fact of life these days. Yeah. But now there's a second company that's suing Garmin for something much more substantial. Suunto, it's another company that makes these devices. And this is what it says. According to Bike Radar, the lawsuit filed in a Texas federal court on September 22nd accuses Garmin of infringing on 5 design patents covering technologies related to respiratory rate measurement, automatic golf swing detection and tracking, antenna construction, and watch casing. Suunto claims these features appear in nearly all of Garmin's watches. So that is a much more substantial thing, it seems to me. But I wonder if Suunto is kind of acting on behalf of Strava in some way, trying to help put some more pressure on Garmin to get them to drop this other thing. I don't know. But this is a big deal. And what worries me is that Garmin has become such a huge company that, you know, people attack the big guys. It's just mm-hmm. one of those things they do. Everybody wants to slay Goliath. But I hope this doesn't mess things up. You know, I hope they don't get to the point where they can't come to an agreement and we don't have that seamless integration that we have today that makes this stuff so easy and so nice to be able to look at.
Yeah, it kind of puzzles me that Suunto jumped in because Suunto has as much to lose if people pull away from Garmin, if Garmin pulls away from Strava as anybody, because this is my head thinking. If let's look at Strava as a sandbox. Everybody's playing in the sandbox right now.
Mm-hmm.
All the big wearable companies are in there. All the participants, you and I, we're in there and we're all playing in the sandbox and getting along. Well, Garmin's the 800-pound gorilla in there, and they're playing nicely in the sandbox. But if they were to get up and say, we're going to go over here and create our own sandbox,
mm-hmm.
then let's say it's 80% Garmin. I don't know what the statistic is, but let's say it's 80% Garmin. If they go over there and create their own sandbox, which they have, which is Garmin Connect,
yep.
if they say this is the only place we're going to allow our people to play, it's not going to make me get rid of Garmin.
Right, me neither.
I love Garmin. Those 80% of the people love Garmin. What's going to happen is the Suunto people are going to feel like they're in a third-rate sandbox now,
mm-hmm.
and they're going to sell their Suunto equipment, go get Garmin, and go to the new you know, the new sandbox.
That's true.
So I don't understand either one of them attacking Garmin. Now, I guess there's a line you got to draw. If it's coming sure. down to design patents and things like that, it's, I don't know, it gets sticky.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, Garmin definitely has the market cornered on yeah. from, I mean, mention golf. I use it for golf, too. From golf yeah. to rucking, they got rucking on it now. You know, you put your weight in and all that stuff. It's they've done it. They're the best in the business, for sure.
And one of the reasons is because they're always moving forward, and this is yep. one of their other efforts to move forward, and somebody said, we're not going to let you move this in this
yeah.
direction.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Well, it's a time for Dean's Thoughts, and that's a time when I share something I've written about the intersection between running and faith. Have you ever seen one of those T-shirts that says something like, my family went to Panama City Beach or something, and all I got was this lousy T-shirt? Sometimes awards feel the same way, and then sometimes they're great. Well, let's talk about how we should look at them. This one's called T-shirts, Medals, and Belt Buckles. A few weeks ago, I found myself recounting my recent epic adventure to a close friend, the moment I finally conquered the 100-mile distance in under 24 hours. As we sat together, the conversation drifted from practical logistics like training plans and nutrition to the gritty personal realities of the journey. We reminisced about my earlier battles, the first failed attempt when my legs rebelled and my mind melted at mile 66, my spirit scraping bottom in the aftermath, the rebuilding of fitness, both physical and mental, all the way to the end of that multiple thousand-mile journey. My friend leaned forward, a wry smile on his face, and lobbed a question that cut through any post-race glow. "So what did you get for all that work?" he asked. I grinned, half expecting the question, and replied, "Well, in the world of ultramarathoning, it is de rigueur to receive a belt buckle. For whatever reason, that's the award." I know, it's kind of weird, isn't it? His eyebrows shot up, and he let out a laugh. "A belt buckle? All that suffering just for a piece of hardware you could buy at any Walmart in the country?" It made me pause. For a moment, I saw it through his eyes. The endless miles, the lonely training, the days of soreness and the doubts, all for something most people wouldn't look at twice in the bargain bin. The absurdity of it rang clear in my head for a moment. But then I pictured that buckle sitting on a shelf behind my desk and felt a surge of pride that ran far deeper than its shiny surface. Why does a simple belt buckle matter so much? Is it so different from the hundreds of race T-shirts I've accumulated over the years? Or how about the hundreds of medals and awards, some piled in a forgotten box and some hanging on a wall in bunches accumulated from past races? At first, maybe not. I used to chase those awards too. Each race, a new hangable trophy. But finishing 100 miles, crossing that line, still moving, still whole, wasn't just about earning another trinket. That buckle is different because of what it cost, not in dollars, but in sweat and determination, in the primal conversation between faith and failure in the darker recesses of my mind. But it's not about the belt buckle, it's about the transformation it represents. This isn't unique to running either. I think back to college when I returned to my faith after years of wandering, wrestling to break old habits like cleaning up my language. It was a messy, imperfect work, like learning to run again after an injury. I counted every slip up, every day trying to earnestly finish a day with a clean slate. The first day I made it, no swearing, nothing but clean words, felt like a finish line. Most people would have shrugged it off. But it was a small miracle to me at the time. All these milestones, whether it's a day of lacking profanity or 100 miles on my feet, can seem trivial when compared to greater feats. There are thousands of people finishing ultramarathons every year, billions who never utter a foul word. But by the world's yardstick, my buckle is ordinary. My struggles have been unremarkable. But what I've come to see, and what I've tried to explain to my friend, is this. The measure of achievement isn't set by comparing ourselves to everyone else. The Bible says that God is perfecting us, not making us flawless, but shaping us a little more every day, refining us, chiseling away the rough edges as we chase after Him, step by fragile, faithful step. What matters is the progress, the fight, the willingness to push another mile, to become just a little bit more than who we were yesterday, whether physically, mentally, or spiritually. So yes, my belt buckle might look ordinary on the outside, but to me, It's a reminder that even at the age of 60, my story isn't finished. I'm still being refined, not for a belt buckle, but for the relentless, hopeful journey of becoming new. Far more than any trophy or trinket, that is what keeps me running. And spending time in prayer and God's Word continuing to refine me in His eyes, which is the most important part of my journey.
It's a great story, Dean. Why is that? Do we know why they started using belt buckles?
I do not. I've never heard that answer to that question, but it's a good one.
Yeah.
Belt buckles for some reason. And, you know, marathons, you have to have a medal for a marathon. That's just part of the
The early ultra marathoners cowboys or?
I don't know.
The belt buckle is usually something you saw. That's the award in rodeos.
Yeah.
So why did it make its way to ultramarathons?
I don't know. I bet one of the early big ultramarathons, like Western States or one of those big ones.
That one makes sense.
Yeah. Like one of them maybe, you know, did the belt buckle thing and then it just caught on. Yeah. I don't know. Interesting. I've never been a big award guy. I mean, I've got a gazillion of them. I used to run 20 to 30 races a year, and it's not bragging, but it's rare for me to walk away from a race without some award. So the belt buckle felt really strange because it's like all of those awards I've gotten over all those years, never thought about a belt buckle until you get to the ultramarathoning world where it's just different. So there's a lot of ultramarathoners have a ton of belt buckles, and they never use any of them, I guess.
Yeah.
That's
strange.
Isn't that weird? The weird thing about the belt buckle is it's not as easy to, you know, a medal is easy to display. You know, they have a metal hanger and you can display those, but belt buckles is kind of weird to display. So
they make little display stands for them.
Do they?
I remember from my rodeo days. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So do they give those out at rodeos?
Yeah, I mean, that's what you win. But, I mean, the belt buckles, especially in the big rodeos, I mean, they're made by, like, Montana silversmiths, so they're expensive. I mean, some belt buckles can be tens of thousands of dollars.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, they got all – it's like jewelry, but it's a belt buckle.
Yeah.
So they got gold and diamonds and
– wow.
Now, I'm sure the Backyard Ultra, they don't give away those belt buckles.
No. But no. I like the medals aren't real gold.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But this whole experience made me think about how we're never finished. We're always still doing stuff. And, you know, I just turned 60 and God's not finished with me. He doesn't want me sitting on the sidelines not doing anything. He wants me to chase a new thing all the time. We talked about that just earlier on this podcast, that we have to force ourselves to do new and different things. We can't just sit on the sidelines and be okay with just doing what we do every day. And so many people these days are okay with that.
Yeah.
And that drives me crazy to see it because there's no reason to be that way.
Sure.
You know, this past weekend, I mentioned at the beginning of the podcast, I performed a marriage ceremony. That was a new thing for me and it was different and it was nerve-wracking a little bit. You know, you told me that somebody asked you one time about doing pictures for their wedding. And your attitude was, no way. I don't want to do anything for a wedding because if I mess something up, that's permanent, you know? And so.
Yeah, if it's your kids' graduation pictures, we can come back the next day and fix that mess up.
Yeah.
Not a wedding.
Yeah. But I thought about that when I was preparing for this. I thought, oh my gosh, this is forever.
Yeah.
Well, once we do this, it's whatever is done is done.
Your words are seared in their history.
Yes. And so, But it was good to have that little bit of a pressure, you know, that feeling of wanting to do something new and different is really good for us.
Yeah.
So I mentioned that, golly, I remember I had, I struggled with this changing my language. And I remember vividly every day trying to get through a day without using profanity. And I remember the first day that I did it. I still remember it like it was yesterday. And I was so proud of myself.
Yeah.
Because I had come such a long way. And it made me think about my in college. When I was in college, I had a class. This was toward graduation, that where the students stood up in front of the class and they presented a kind of a case study. And then the people in the class were charged with making comments or asking questions about this case study. And you had to participate. If you didn't participate, you got a zero for that day. So you had to say something. I think you had to make at least two comments or questions during the class. Well, the professor would sit in the back of the room and he would count every time somebody said filler words like, you know. You know, people will use
or,
that. Just those filler words. And he would count the number of times you did that. And it was exceedingly difficult not to use those filler words. And I don't remember what it was. It wasn't, you know, it was something else at the time that I had a really hard time not saying. And I remember it working on that time after time after time and in trying to change class after class after class. And it's a lot like our lives. Mm-hmm. If we're, I wasn't going to do that by accident. I wasn't going to not say one of those words by accident. Mm-hmm. It was going to take me focusing on it. Mm-hmm. And we have to be intentional about changing whatever course we're on. If we just continue to float along whatever course we're on, it ain't going to change. Mm-hmm. And if it doesn't matter what it is. And if it's something that God has you on a path for, yes, God will put you on paths. He will put things in your path. He will do things that will help you along your way, but he don't do it for you. Mm. And we have got to, our sinful nature is going to keep us in a bad place. Mm-hmm. And unless we intentionally work on overcoming that sinful nature, we'll never get there.
Yeah. That story about the fewer words, it reminds me of the, you hear the story. I've heard it said different ways, but a dad wrote his daughter a letter and he said, I would have wrote you a shorter letter, but I didn't have time. And it's because we use a lot of filler. But to present something succinctly and precisely, it takes a long time to think about that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a good word.
At Upward Sports, we're all about helping you on your fitness journey, but we also want to support you on your faith journey as well. You can sign up today for the self-paced Bible in a Year Challenge and listen every day as I read through the entire Bible in 365 episodes. As a bonus, I also give you helpful tips of the day and finish with an encouraging quote in each episode. You must be an Upward Running member to participate in this exciting and edifying challenge. Sign up and start listening today. Every week I share a reason why running and or walking is so awesome. You know, we were talking about this Garmin Strava Suunto stuff and all the data that you can have when you track these activities. Is there any other thing that you can do, a sport or an activity that you can do that gathers more information than running or cycling?
Or golf. Garmin does the golf too.
That's true, they do. But is there as much to it as, I mean, with heart rate and cadence and all of the things that are...
There's a lot
in golf too.
Yeah, especially if you have the ball tracker. I mean, it picks up spin and...
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. But it's cool to have all that stuff. It's really neat to be able to pour over that. And it's, you know, you may not use it, but it's interesting nonetheless. Mm-hmm. We were at the Kind of Fast podcast, our sister podcast. They were talking about cadence. Mm-hmm. And it made me think, you know, years ago, we knew what cadence was.
Sure.
But we didn't really think about it much. And if you wanted to know what your cadence was, you had to actually count it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Now it's
not just like your heart rate in the old days.
The
old two-finger trick.
And now it's just, it's on your watch. Mm-hmm. It's just at the end of the run, you look, oh, my cadence was 172 on my run yesterday.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's pretty cool to have all that stuff. Well, it is marathon season and cross-country season right now. Mm-hmm. Some of my favorite running times. The marathon majors, there's 7 marathon majors, and the last 4 of them, they have the 3 in the spring, and then the last 4 is Sydney, which happened in August. I think it was August. Then Berlin is in September, which was just passed, which we'll talk about that in a second. Chicago is in October, and then New York is in November. And these are always really fun to to follow. And Berlin, the world record has been set in Berlin a few times. So it's usually a really fast one. But this year it was warmer. It was like 72 degrees at start time for the marathon this year. And so it was slower than it normally is. But Sebastian Sawway still ran 2:02, even though it was warm, which makes me think he's going to run sub-2 in the next year or two.
Really?
If he finds a fast marathon and gets the good weather, I think he can do it. And here's the greatest thing about Sebastian Sawway. Sebastian Sawway is having himself tested extra right now. And he's doing that on purpose because he wants everybody to know that when he breaks the world record, he is
clean. Which tells you he knows he's going to do it.
Yeah.
At least in his mind.
He's got the confidence.
It's going to happen.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. Which is pretty cool. So, you know, when we pay our taxes, you know, there's that extra space on the tax where you can give more if you want.
Yeah.
Like
I've
if you
never
want to,
understood that. Yeah. Never understood. I'm not giving a dime more to the.
But how many people argue that we need to be taxed more? There's a lot of people that will argue we need to be taxed
That's
more.
True. That's
and I don't
true.
See a single
I'm
one,
not
of,
one
them.
Of those.
No. But I don't see a single one of those people writing an extra check to send to the government. They want you to write extra checks. Yeah. They don't want themselves to write the extra checks. Well, here's a guy that's putting his money where his mouth is and saying, you know what? I'm going to write the extra check. I'm going to get tested extra. It's going to be a big hassle in my life, but I don't care. Yeah. I'm going to do it because I want everybody to know this is accurate and true and honest. And I hats off to Sebastian Sawway. I am rooting for him.
Yeah.
So anyway, Chicago's coming up. There's a bunch of fast guys in this one. John Carrere has mentioned that he might want to go for the record one day. And so Chicago's kind of a roll of the dice with the weather. Sometimes it's really warm. Sometimes it's really windy. So sometimes it's not conducive to a fast time. But the world record, current world record, was set in Chicago.
Yeah.
So
our associate pastor at my church, Thomas, is running it this weekend.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
All
Chicago.
Right.
Yeah.
All right. Anyway, Jacob Kiplimo is also in this one. He is the half marathon world record holder. And then Connor Mance will be running. And so Connor Mance, I hope he finally gets the American record. You know, the American record is set by Khalid Kanucci, which is fine. He is an American, but he was kind of a transplant American. It'd be nice to have somebody who's just, you know, American born and grew up here and to set that record. So we'll see how it goes. But Connor's got a good chance at it, I think, too. The women's field is pretty good, too, but not nearly as good as the men's side. And in New York, when it comes up, if you don't know this, New York is not a fast marathon. When I grew up, I thought New York was a fast marathon because there were fast times. They were running Alberto Salazar was running 2:08 in New York back in the early 80s. And so I never thought about it not being a fast marathon. But now I know it's not. His 2:08 that he ran way back in the 80s would still win some of the New Yorks of today.
What is the course record there? Do you know?
It's 2:04:58 is the record. So it's rarely under 2:08. Hmm. Rarely. It's been under 2:08 maybe four times.
Really?
Yeah. And so, and this is Alberto Salazar. Way back then, we were spoiled by watching great marathoning. Yeah. And we didn't even know it at the time. Well, this year, the World Cross Country Championships are in the United States. That's very rare. And so they are in the United States this year, and they're in Tallahassee, Florida, in January this year. So if you get a chance, pay attention to that. It should be fun. It's a neat course there in Tallahassee. I'm going to be running that same course for the Club Cross Country Championships just, I think, a week or two before the World Championships. Hmm. So I may have to make two trips down to Tallahassee in successive weeks if they're back-to-back weeks, because I want to see those professional guys run. That's got to be a lot of fun to watch, I would think. So cross country, great. How about a trivia question for this year? Since we are talking about cross country here, how many times has the United States won the World Cross Country Championships? If you know the answer to that, or more likely you Googled the answer to that, you can send that to dean@upward.org. And if you're the first person to send in the correct answer, you will win. Our motivational thought of the week. comes from Mina Samuels. She's the author of the book, Run Like a Girl. She said, our running shoes have magic in them, the power to transform a bad day into a good day, frustration into speed, self-doubt into confidence, chocolate cake into muscles.
I wish that last one was true.
This kind of goes right along with all the stuff we've talked about today,
yeah,
doesn't it?
For sure.
I think a lot of times just getting out in nature just makes things better.
Yeah, for sure.
There's a bunch of studies out there that prove that when you connect with nature, when you get outside and you have sunlight on your skin, it makes a difference health-wise, physical health-wise, and mental health-wise.
And we all know it. We don't need a study. We all intuitively know that.
You just know it.
You just feel better.
You just know it. Why do we know it? Because God mm-hmm. is in it. Mm-hmm. And that's
for
why
sure.
we know it. Yep. All right. Thank you for listening. We appreciate it. And we'll be back next week. But until then, may God bless every step of every run and or walk. Go out there and shine your light.
Good job, Dean.
For more information about Upward Running, visit upwardrunning.com. If you have questions about your salvation, click on the Peace with God tab. There is nothing more important. Thanks for joining us today.